Hello, friends. This is Cliff Knight from Equippers International. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We want to lift up Jesus and provide a place for you to learn more about Him and to grow in your relationship with Him. If you find the podcast helpful, feel free to share it with others. We believe it will be a source of blessing and encouragement, and you will be strengthened in your relationship with Jesus. Hello, welcome back to the podcast, and we're in the book of Romans, and we're started chapter 9 in the last couple of episodes. We're taking up Paul's very important discussion on Israel in Romans 9, 10, and 11. We talked in the introductory episodes about this section of the book and how Paul is transitioning in his discussion. He's laid out many of the foundational truths about the gospel that he wanted to bring across. And we finished up his discussion in that regard in chapter 8. And then Paul turns his attention to Israel. Specifically, he refers to them as his fellow kinsmen according to the flesh. And he's going to take up this important discussion of Israel. Now, in the process of doing this study in the next three chapters of the book, it's very careful for us to just to follow Paul's line of thought. There's a lot of preconceived ideas and many notions and theologies and doctrines that have been developed over the centuries regarding Israel. And I by no means am going to solve all the questions surrounding all those things in these episodes. So I'm going to just set the record straight that I'm not going to be able to answer every possible permeation and question regarding one's belief about Israel and God's plan for Israel and how all that is going to bear out or has borne out in the past, okay? But I am going to try to interpret these passages as true as I can to what Paul says elsewhere, what rest of the scripture teaches. We're not going to go back into a complete Old Testament study of the prophecies. We'll pick those up as Paul picks them up in his discussion. And also, I'm by no means a Old Testament scholar, and I'm just not prepared to enter into a critical discussion on these matters at a level that many other people might be. So what you're going to find me doing in these episodes many times as we step through these chapters of scripture in Romans 9, 10, and 11 is I'm going to give disclaimers, and I'm going to be very humble in my approach. I do have some opinions. I do have some convictions of what I believe to be what Paul's trying to communicate to us. But at the end of the day, as with all biblical interpretation, each of us has to read the scripture, pray, ask the Lord to help us understand what's being shared so that we can then develop our own beliefs and live out of those convictions without letting our heart condemn us and without wavering back and forth. So I will share some of my opinions. They may seem very straightforward. They may seem too strong for some, and maybe not strong enough for others, but I'm not here to try to come across and champion any specific agenda. I just want to do my best to interpret these passages. So far in chapter 9, we've seen that Paul clearly identifies who he's referring to when he refers to Israel. Now, on a critical note, it's important to see that in the book of Romans, starting in chapter 9, Paul actually uses the word Israel and Israelites for the first time in the book. Prior to that time, throughout the book, on numerous occasions, he's referred to the Jews or the Judeans. Now, this is going to take a little bit of explanation for us to kind of get to the bottom of what these terms mean. I just want to go on record first as saying I don't think that they are synonymous. And I think any honest historical study and biblical interpretation of those words will bear out the fact that the Jews of the first century were somehow removed from historical Israel. Now, remember the fate of Israel in regards to what happened to them at the hands of the Assyrians and then the Babylonians was almost 750, almost 800 years prior to the writing of this letter and to the time of Christ. So we know during those time periods, the time periods that many of the Old Testament prophets prophesied to Israel, that Israel incurred devastation from their surrounding pagan ruling neighboring countries. The Assyrians specifically dealt a very devastating blow to the northern tribes of Israel, and then the Babylonians subsequently to the southern tribes, which consisted of technically 2.5 tribes, but let's just say definitely the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin. And so the historical outworking of these things has significant impact on the way Paul's talking in his references to the Jews and to Israel. Now, if we go back and look at the destruction of Israel during these invasions of these pagan nations, we know that it was very devastating. Now, how devastating was it? Can one go back historically and measure and say, actually, all the Israelites in the northern kingdom were destroyed by the Assyrians? Well, probably many would say that's not the case, but they did incur very significant fatalities. Now, Paul even quotes Isaiah later in chapter 9, where he says, "Unless the Lord had left to us a posterity, we would have become like Sodom and would have resembled Gomorrah." Well, now what happened with Sodom and Gomorrah? They were absolutely, completely destroyed. We know that from the accounts in the Old Testament. Those cities, every single human being in those cities was dead. Now, he's saying, if it wasn't for God's grace, for the posterity's sake of Israel, then they would have been like Sodom and Gomorrah. So that tells us that there was significant devastation. And so what this lends itself to is what we're going to talk about in detail, what Paul goes to, and he says that God saved a remnant. So when we start referring to historical Israel, we have to give credence and understanding to these historical events. We can't just make broad sweeping statements and say, well, all of Israel just continued on through time and posterity, because they didn't. They experienced significant devastation. So why am I focusing on this so much? Well, it's important when we read the New Testament, specifically Paul, specifically these chapters, that we understand that Paul has in view the proper perspective, the proper understanding of what is meant by Israel. Now, in Paul's day, there was very little connection between the Jews and the Israelites. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that 750 years had passed and people were not easily able to trace their heritage or their lineage back to specific contact points in the nation of Israel. So what basically happened over time is that the inhabitants of the land of Judea became known as Judeans or the Jews from a cultural perspective. Now, there's a lot of issues surrounding this discussion that I'm not going to be able to go into now, but let it suffice to say that these are not clear-cut issues. They're very complicated and very difficult to make sense of. And somebody has to do the historical legwork to go back and do all the research. And there's been books and books of this written. But let it suffice to say that the Jews of Paul's time were more a cultural reference to a people group more than they were a specific religious group related to the nation of Israel. Now, we know that the Jews practiced the religion that they inherited from their ancestors of the Israelite nation, but there was an element that was very far removed from Israel. Now, this is why Paul can talk on one hand about Jews or Judeans, and in those contexts, he often contrasts them with the Gentiles, those ethnic people that lie outside of that specific small group of Judeans referenced as the Jews. So Paul says that there are Jews and there are Gentiles, and he couches a lot of his discussion about the gospel in that context because that was his context. That was the cultural context in which the gospel came. It came first to the cultural people of Judea, as they were in some way linked to their ancient ancestral past of Israel. But Paul also turns his attention specifically to Israel in Romans chapter 9. Why does he do this? Well, Paul made it very clear in a couple occasions, one right here in chapter 9, another in chapter 3 of Philippians, he says, I am an Israelite. I am of the tribe of Benjamin. What he's doing when he makes those statements is he is giving credence to the fact that while the 10 tribes of northern Israel were most likely completely or near completely devastated, the southern tribes of Judah and Benjamin were in some regard left intact, enough so that Paul with confidence could say, I come from the tribe of Benjamin. So when Paul talks about Israel, he understands that when he said Israel, it meant something very different than it would have meant 1,000 years prior. It meant that it was a much smaller group of people. And so we talked about in the last episode how Paul begins to narrow his definition of Israel. And he makes the statement, not all who are of the whole nation of Israel over 1,000 years ago, not all of them are those people. They are a specific, more narrower group. And then he starts to narrow the group down. Now, he starts way back with Abraham, and he begins to track Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that's what he does here in verse 9 of chapter 9. This is where we left off in the previous episode. He says, for this is the word of promise. At this time, I will come and Sarah shall have a son. So he goes right back to God's promise, which he's always done. We've seen this already in Romans chapter 4. He's going to always put a foundational point at God's promise to Abraham to give him a remnant seed. Now we know a couple of things. One is that seed is directly linked to Jesus. He does that in Galatians 3. We've seen that. I've gone to it on several different occasions. He says that the promise of God was given to Abraham and to his seed, not his seeds, plural, but to his seed, which is Christ. And specifically, in the natural, according to the flesh birthright, it's going to become narrower and narrower as it goes through Abraham and then through Isaac. And this is what he said in verse 10. He says, and not only this, but there was Rebekah. Also, when she had conceived, she had twins by one man, our father Isaac. So Isaac marries Rebekah and she gets pregnant. So from the son of promise of Abraham, Isaac, come the twins of Rebekah. And those twins, as we know, were Esau and Jacob. Now listen to what Paul says in verse 11. For though the twins were not yet born and had not done anything good or bad, so that God's purpose according to his choice would stand, not because of works, but because of him who calls. So what is he saying? All he's saying is that God had chosen a path through which he was going to bring about his children, Israel, and through which he was ultimately going to bring about the Messiah, Jesus. He had to follow an historical process. And in doing so, when Rebekah got pregnant with twins, he chose one over the other. Now, some have developed a whole theology related to predestination and all the things surrounding that, which I believe is not an accurate understanding of what the New Testament teaches. It's a bit inflated in reading back into ideas and notions that are not present in the text. What is Paul saying? He's simply saying God had a purpose and he had to make a choice in order for his purpose to come about. It had to be one or the other. My goodness, there were twins in her womb. So it says before either one of them did good or bad. You know, we make Esau out to be a really bad guy. He was kind of foolish by selling his birthright for a bowl of porridge, but it says that before they were born, before one was either good or bad, God chose. And it says there in verse 12, just as it was said to her, the older will serve the younger. Just as it is written, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated. Now, let's look at these two words, love and hate, and then we'll kind of wrap up this episode. It's gone kind of long, but I want to cover some of these things in detail so we can stay with Paul's line of thought. I don't think that God hated Esau in a way that we would understand hatred. Okay, he's saying that he gave preference. He preferred Jacob over Esau. Now, remember, he did this before Esau ever proved to be a fool. Now, nonetheless, Jacob also proved to be a fool. His name means deceiver. So God ultimately had to wrestle with Jacob as well, and he had to wound him, so to speak. He had to cause him to have a limp. He had to wrestle with God, and then he had to change his name to Israel so that the nation of Israel could then come through him. So Jacob was not a hero in the story by any means. It's simply that God made a choice, and he had to make a choice, and it was according to his purpose. Now, I want to focus on that word to end this episode. It says back in verse 11 that God's purpose according to choice would come about. Remember, God always works according to purpose. And this is exactly what Paul is explaining. He had a purpose. He was moving things through history so that he could accomplish his redemptive purpose. It wasn't about Israel. It never has been about Israel. It was about the world. It was about all the nations that God wanted to bless. Now, we're going to get into more detail about what happened in Israel's history that ultimately came to fruition in Paul's time. He's going to deal with that. But this is why Paul is discussing these issues, because in Paul's present time, he has still a burden for an understanding of what about ancient Israel? What about my forefathers? What about those that remain now who are my kinsmen? What does God's perspective toward them look like? And this is what Paul's trying to explain in these three chapters of Scripture. It's a huge discussion. It's an important topic. It's one that has a lot of interpretive dynamics, but we're just going to step through and see how God leads us in this process. So be strong and courageous and love Jesus more.